Unfortunately, security is frequently something that is an afterthought that is tacked on at the end. Thankfully, at SOSP, we're at the end. But nevertheless, these are some of the most interesting talks, and I'm told we're at the end because they are the most interesting. So first up, we have Nikolai Zeldovich from MIT, has a job, and he's going to tell us about how to add data flow security policies into existing applications.
All right, thanks, Adam. So I'm going to tell you guys about some work we've done at MIT on improving application security by using data flow assertions. So many vulnerabilities today are caused by simple errors made by programmers writing application code. On this slide is a table of the six most common vulnerabilities discovered last year according to the CVE database. You'll note that all these examples involve the programmer making a fairly simple mistake in their application. For example, in SQL injection, a programmer forgets to sanitize the user's input before using it in a SQL query. In cross-site scripting, the programmer forgets to remove JavaScript code from user's input before using it on an HTML page. Directory traversals involve the same thing with path names. And script injection involves a programmer forgetting to check where the code came from before running it. And finally, missing access control bugs occur when programmers forget to check the access control policy before revealing sensitive data to a user. So the common thread in all of these bugs and errors is that the programmer is forgetting to invoke some security check somewhere in their application. So to see why this is happening, let's look at a picture of a high-level view of some application with a bunch of inputs on the left and outputs on the right. And inside of this application's code are various data flow paths from inputs to outputs. And almost any reasonably complex application these days that's evolved over time looks like this. So what do these programming errors look like? So let's look at SQL injection first. We have these two different inputs, one of which is a stored query, which is safe to use, and the other is input coming from a user, perhaps the attacker. And on the right, we have a SQL database. The rule we want to enforce is that we always want to quote the user's input before using it in a SQL query. But there might be many different paths from the user's input to the SQL database. And if we forget to quote the user's input on just one of these paths, the user will be able to, or the attacker in this case, will be able to inject arbitrary SQL statements into our database. The picture for missing access control checks looks almost the same. We have a protected file on the left, and the user, perhaps the attacker on the right. And we want to make sure that whenever data from this protected file goes to the user, we check the access control rules. But if on one of these paths we forget to check the access control rules, we're in trouble and the attacker can get our secret data. Again, in cross-site scripting, the picture is almost exactly the same. On the left, we have an attacker's browser, and we want to make sure that whenever data goes from the attacker to another user, such as a victim, we strip away any JavaScript code that attacker might have supplied. And if we forget one of these paths, we're again in trouble. So what's going on here is that it's actually fairly difficult for the programmer to know exactly all the places in the code to invoke these checks. So today, what people try to do is they try to invoke these checks on all the paths from the source to the sink. And unfortunately, there's just too many of these paths in most applications. For example, PHPDB, a common web application, has over 500 places where these checks need to be invoked for cross-site scripting alone. And it's not surprising that there's been many cases where just one missing check allowed the attacker to compromise its application. The reason that there are so many places to invoke these checks is because these security decisions and checks cannot be made by looking at the data alone. If you want to perform this check at the source, you don't yet know where this data is going, so you don't know which check to invoke. And if you want to perform this check at the destination or the sink, you don't know where the data came from, and you don't know, again, which check to invoke, if any. So to help programmers address this problem, we propose to associate these checks with data in an application, as opposed to with individual locations in code. So we're going to assume a trusted language runtime, such as one provided by PHP or Python, and we're going to assume that the programmer is not trying to write malicious code. Given these two assumptions, then, we're going to allow programmers to tag their data with assertions about how the data should be used at the source when it enters the application. Our system is going to track these assertions along with the data as it moves through the application. And these assertions are going to be checked at the sinks when the data is about to be used in some way to make sure we haven't violated our policy. So to understand how this approach is going to help us solve real security problems, let's take a look at an example application that probably most of you have used, namely the Hartgraph Conference Management System that SOSP used to manage paper submissions this year. So Hartgraph is a fairly standard site where you need to log in with your email and password. And if you forget your password, you can ask the system to send you a reminder by clicking on that checkbox, and it will send you an email message containing your current password. So far, this seems so good because it only sends your password to your email address, even if some attacker requests it on your behalf. But there was another feature in Hartgraph that was causing a problem. Namely, there was an email preview mode, which the program chair or the system administrator can use to configure the system so that it displays any email message it sends in the browser instead of actually sending it out. This is actually quite handy if you want to fine-tune an email message you want to send to all the authors that submitted to a conference. But the problem is, once the program chair placed the system in this mode, then anyone else who came up and tried to ask for a password reminder would get that email message displayed in their own browser. So if I ask for my password reminder, it would display my password in my browser. And if I ask for the program chair's email reminder, it'll display his password in my browser as well. And this bug actually came up at the Hotnets conference a couple of years back. Well, this particular bug, of course, has been solved since then, and people have figured out, you know, where to insert a statement and so on. But how do we prevent such bugs from reoccurring in the future, or similar bugs? Well, what's going on is that we believe the program really does have some security plan in mind for dealing with these kinds of problems. They want to sanitize HTML to prevent cross-site scripting. They want to make sure that a password is only sent to the right user's email address. But it's difficult to ensure this plan is followed because it has to be enforced everywhere in the code that this data might flow through. And this is difficult for at least two reasons. One is that there's just many data flow paths, as I illustrated earlier, and you have to get each and every one of them in order to be safe. And as I illustrated earlier, many applications have hundreds of places where these checks have to be made. The other challenge is that your application might be written by many different developers, including third-party plugin authors. So the same PHPDB application has actually over 800 different plugins written by something like 500 programmers. And from looking at some of this code, I can tell you that these guys don't quite know the whole security plan and where to put which checks. So to help deal with this problem, we're going to allow programmers to make their security plans very explicit in their application. In particular, I'm going to present to you a modified language runtime called Resin for languages like Python and PHP, where the programmers can specify explicit data flow assertions about how their data can flow through the application. The runtime is going to check this assertion on every path from a source to a sink, and this assertion is going to prevent the attacker from exploiting these vulnerabilities where the programmer forgets to insert a check somewhere. Note that Resin is not actually a bug finding tool. It's not going to look at your code and say, here's a bug. Instead, it's a system that you use at runtime to prevent attackers from exploiting any vulnerabilities you might have. So it sounds reasonable maybe in theory, but in practice, there's a couple of challenges. So suppose our plan is to only send a particular password to that email address. One question is, how do we actually check if a given program obeys this plan? Or for that matter, how would a programmer even express such an application-specific statement to our system, which involves application-defined users and so on? So to check whether a program obeys such a plan, we're going to associate these assertions with data in an application, such as the actual string containing the user's password in the application's memory. The language runtime is then going to track these assertions along with the data as it's copied or moved by the application's own code. And we're going to check these assertions at security boundaries, such as the external boundary of the language runtime when the data might be sent over the network or written to a file. And this makes sure that our assertion is not violated before the data leaves our control for good. And to help programmers express these assertions, we're going to allow them to express them using regular code in their application. This is both very simple and general purpose, and has the advantage of allowing programmers to reuse existing code and data structures they might already have in their application to perform these security checks. So let's now look at how exactly our Resin language runtime is going to help us prevent this Hartgraph password disclosure bug I showed you earlier. Here's a diagram showing the Resin language runtime. On the right-hand side in the top corner, we have a copy of the user's password in the application's memory. And on the left, we have all of the outgoing channels from this runtime, which might be used to send a copy of this password somewhere else. So what the programmer has to do in order to prevent password disclosure yet the programmer has to first associate a policy with this password when it first comes into the system. For example, when it's first generated or a user is created. So this policy might be only send this password via email to this particular address. And then the programmer also has to associate a filter object with every security boundary on the left-hand side here. And this filter object is going to be responsible for controlling what can go over that boundary. And this filter object is going to check that the policy is upheld. In practice, actually, the Resin system provides default filter objects for all of the standard outgoing boundaries, all these security boundaries. So the programmer rarely has to actually implement the filter objects themselves. So now that we have these policies and filters in place, what the runtime is going to do is it's first going to propagate these policy objects whenever data is copied around. So for example, if you construct an email message containing my password, the runtime will propagate the policy and associate it with the resulting email message as well. And then, when the application tries to send this email message out via some outgoing channel, the filter object will check the policy and make sure that the data is actually allowed to go out over that particular channel. And the nice thing about this policy is that it actually allows us to reason about what's going to happen with our data without having to understand all of the code handling it. So if we were to use some third-party email module that we don't know exactly what's going on inside of it, we can still understand that it's not going to be able to send our data out of the HTTP and it's only going to be able to email our password reminder. Now, this sort of illustrates at a high level what's going on in Resin, but let's actually take a look at the code required by the for the programmer to write in order to implement this policy. So to start with, we need to implement one of these policy objects. And this is going to be in PHP code because that's what hot crap is written in. So we start off by defining a password policy class. Somewhere we need to store the user's email address, so we just use a private field in this class to store the user's username, which happens to also be the email address in hot crap. And then we need to provide a method called export check, which is going to be invoked by the filter object to check whether this data can cross over a certain security boundary. And to help the policy object make this decision, the filter is going to provide a context object to this export check method embodying some information about the boundary that's being crossed right now. And this context object is really just a hash table mapping arbitrary user and Resin supplied keys to values. So the first thing we want to do in this export check method is allow the user to get a reminder of his own password. So we do this by saying, well, if the data is going over our mail type channel and it's going to the correct user, we'll return and allow this flow. We might also want to allow the program chair to override any security policy here and get a reminder of any user's password to help them log in. And we can do this simply by reusing the system code that Hotcrap already has to identify what it means to be a program chair. Note that if we were actually using some specialized policy language here, we would have to re-implement the notion of a program chair all over again in this policy. But because our policy object is implemented in the same programming language, we can reuse existing code and data structure. And finally, if neither of these two conditions hold, we're going to throw an exception to deny the flow of this object over that particular channel. Finally, now that we have this policy object in place, all we have to do is associate an instance of this policy object when we actually create a new user and specify his password for the first time. Now, from a user's and programmer's point of view, the password only enters the system once, when the user is first created or when the user changes his password. But from the point of view of a language runtime, the password might actually keep going in and out of the system when it's written to the file or the database and read back in. And it would be disastrous if we had to actually require the programmer to re-tag this data every time it came back into the language runtime. Because the programmer could, again, make similar mistakes that we saw earlier. To avoid this problem, we use filter objects to serialize policies to persistent storage. So for example, when this password is written to a file, through a filter object, that filter object is going to take the policy associated with that data and serialize it into the extended attributes of that particular file. And of course, we'll be able to deserialize it when it comes back into the application later. Now, this now prevents the attacker from somehow exploiting data written to the file system that is then read back into the application and trying to exploit this feature to somehow get a copy of the password. But there might be other applications running on the same system, such as an Apache web server, that might provide attackers with new ways to get a copy of the same data from this file. The cool thing, though, is that because we have a very explicit policy serialized along with this data, we can modify Apache to similarly deserialize this policy, check it in its own address space, and as a result enforce the same consistent application-level policy for the security of this data, regardless of which attack vector or which data flow path the attacker tries to exploit to get a copy of our passwords. Okay, so I've shown you how Resonant can track one policy with a data object and prevent these password disclosure bugs. In practice, things are slightly more general. Resonant actually allows users and programmers to track a set of policies for every primitive data element in the system, such as a character and string or an integer value. And these policies are propagated only on explicit data flows, which is what we're trying to help programmers track. So for example, when you concatenate the strings, we will propagate policies. But if you use an integer to index into an array, we will not bother propagating policies in this case from B to A. And finally, the runtime is going to merge policies when different data elements are combined. In the common case of strings, this is actually done automatically because our language runtime does byte-level tracking and different bytes are not combined in string operations for the most part. And in the rare case when we actually merge two different integers with different policies, the policy objects have to actually provide a merge strategy. And typically this merge strategy is the union of the policies on all the inputs, which is then applied to the resulting value. All right, so we've actually implemented two prototypes of this system, one in PHP and one in Python. The PHP implementation is about 6,000 lines of code, largely because the code base is not the most best engineered piece of code. But we also implemented this in Python, which required quite a bit less work, largely because the interpreter is much cleaner, but also because we haven't quite implemented all the features. So you should think of this Python prototype as mostly a proof of concept to show that our ideas are not specific to the PHP language in some way. So to evaluate Resonant, we wanted to figure out if it really helped programmers uphold the security plan they had in their head by writing these explicit data flow assertions in their code. So questions in particular we have are, how hard is it actually for a programmer to want to write one of these assertions for their application? What kinds of attacks can these assertions prevent? And does the programmer actually need to know that attack ahead of time to write one of these assertions? So to answer these questions, we ran two different experiments. In the first one, we took five applications with known security bugs, and we wrote assertions to prevent attackers from exploiting these bugs. Here are the results from this experiment, including the five applications we tested. There's a couple of things to note here. One is that these assertions are very short. They're on the order of tens of lines of code each. What's going on here, we believe, is that first, it helps that Resonant provides filter objects by default so that programmers can concentrate on writing just the policy objects for their data. And the second thing is that programmers are able to reuse existing checks they already have inside of their application when writing these policy objects. The second thing to note is that our assertions are actually able to prevent quite a wide range of vulnerabilities, from missing access control checks to cross-site scripting and password disclosure, which shows that these assertions are actually quite general purpose. Finally, another interesting point you mentioned is that these assertions are not specific to a particular attack vector. So in these two applications, we wrote the same general assertion where a password can only be disclosed to the user's own email address. In Hotcraft, this prevented a logic bug that I already showed you in the previous slides. But in this other application, the MyPHP Scripts login library, what was going on was that the login library was writing passwords to a world-readable file in a web server's directory. And then attackers were able to retrieve it by just doing HTTP requests. But by associating the same assertion with the passwords, Apache was able to deserialize its policy and check it and prevent attackers from getting a copy of the user's passwords. This suggests that one high-level assertion which just states what the programmer wants to happen can actually prevent a wide range of ways in which, in this case, a password can be disclosed. So this experiment showed that Resonant can prevent known bugs from reoccurring. So this is good. Resonant can be used to avoid regression so that the same bugs don't come back and bite us again. But a much more dangerous kind of attack is one where the attackers find and exploit a new bug for which we don't have a fix yet. And we wanted to show that Resonant can prevent these kinds of unknown bugs as well. So to do so, what we did was we again took five applications and we wrote high-level assertions capturing what we thought was the overall security policy of that application. This is not specific to some attack, but just captures what we believe the application is trying to achieve. And then we manually looked through the application code, trying to find places where there were vulnerabilities that our assertion would have prevented. So here are the experiments, here's the results from this experiment. The final bit is that we were able to find, and thereby prevent using assertions, vulnerabilities in 4 out of 5 in these applications. So by writing these assertions, which were again on the order of tens of lines of code each, focusing on the high level of policy that the programmer wants to enforce, we're able to prevent security vulnerabilities in 4 out of these 5 applications. And the fifth one, Hotgrab, turned out to not have any vulnerabilities that we were smart enough to find at least. All right, so because Resin is a runtime mechanism, it does have some performance overhead, and our paper has quite a bit more detail about what that is, but I just wanted to show you some representative result. So we took Hotgrab and we implemented 3 assertions in it, one to prevent disclosure of passwords, one to enforce access control to papers, and the third one to ensure the anonymity of authors. And we ran Hotgrab with the workload from the last 30 minutes before the SOSP 07 submission deadline, which turned out to be the busiest time period for that web server. And the result was that Resin incurred about 30% CPU overhead for that workload, which in practical terms increased the server's CPU utilization from 14% to 19%. And we believe this is a pretty reasonable trade-off for a number of applications that might value security over a slight performance edge. Now, there's a bit of future work that we'd like to follow on here. One is that it would be great if we could report errors earlier by using some static analysis and help the programmer fix these errors sooner. The other is that it would be great if our assertions were able to span across different language runtimes and different machines in a distributed system. And finally, it would be great if we were able to use these assertions to sometimes enforce our rules for untrusted application code. Now, this problem, of course, has not been unnoticed in the research community. There's been a lot of related work. Pearl Taint, in part, inspired our work and a number of other pieces of work on vulnerability-specific tools that use the idea of tainting to prevent cross-site scripting and SQL injection. And Resin generalized this idea to provide programmers with very general purpose data tracking mechanisms that can solve both these problems and very application specific bugs like this Hotgrab password disclosure bug. Information flow control systems like GIF and HiStar also have this idea of trying to focus on the security of data as opposed to the security of code. But these guys are largely focused on trying to confine malicious code at the cost of having to rewrite or redesign your application. And finally, language security checks and tools to perform them, like aspect-oriented programming, are quite similar in spirit to Resin, in that they help programmers write more secure code. And in particular, aspect-oriented programming helps programmers separate different concerns in their application. You can think of Resin as providing a new kind of concern, a concern associated with data in an application. So in summary, I've told you that attackers often exploit missing security checks in applications, and that it's hard for programmers to currently check every flow in their application. I've shown you a language runtime called Resin, which allows programmers to attach security assertions to data, which will be checked on any possible data flow at runtime. And I've shown you that these kinds of data flow assertions can prevent a wide range of bugs in your applications and practice. Thanks very much. I'd be happy to field questions.
Explicit data flows. I was wondering if you're concerned about implicit data flows, like you showed a table lookup, which could be Unicode conversion or something like that, the kinds of classic things we see in sort of something like a team check that are problems. Do you have a plan for what you're going to do about implicit?
So we, in general, we're not concerned with implicit flows if the programmer really just does an array lookup. However, what you're pointing out is there's often tables that do, for example, uppercase of strings or Unicode conversions. And in that case, what we actually do is we attach a filter object to the function that does this Unicode translation. And that filter object looks at the policies of the incoming objects and attaches the right policy semantically to the outgoing object as well. So we use filters.
It's not just at the boundaries of the system, maybe sometimes.
That's right, yeah. So we actually have, we use filters for a number of different things that we described in the paper. One of them is attaching two functions to implement semantic level data tracking.
Yes.
Still quiet.
Switches.
Yeah.
sense to you, Mike.
Okay, Trent Jacob from Penn State. I was just wondering if you had a cases, you know, involved in security, you know, you start combining data together, and then it becomes inaccessible. And I was wondering if you, at the secrecy level, you understand why the number of constraints that merge together begins together is unreasonable. I was wondering if you saw any of those cases.
Absolutely, we did run into them at first, and that's exactly why we have byte-level tracking. So when you construct a SQL query, it has all these pieces of data in it that have really different policies on it. But if you have byte-level tracking, then you can peel apart the SQL query, and the individual policies stick with the individual pieces of data that were part of that string. So byte-level tracking helps a lot in that case.
So I was curious, you have a lot of facilities for application-specific checks. I was wondering, how well you could apply this to some more general deny by default kinds of things, such as, for instance, prohibiting data that you read off the wire from HTTP from ever hitting the database without being explicitly untainted.
So that's exactly what's going on in our SQL injection and cross-site scripting assertions, which is that we also have input filters that I didn't quite illustrate, or a file filter, or backfold as an input filter, and it assigns certain policies when the data comes into the application, such as this data came from the wire. And in SQL injection, we make sure that that data cannot reach the database without being sanitized first. In cross-site scripting, we make sure it's the JavaScript is removed before it's sent to another web browser. So that is one kind of assertion that we do have.
I think we have time for one more question.
Hi, Jeremy Elson from Microsoft Research. I like this work, and one of those interesting parts is where you showed one application policy being serialized and unserialized and executed by a different application. I'm wondering how that works. It seems like if you have a policy in PHP using PHP's internal hotcraft-specific data structures, how can Apache deserialize that same policy and execute it, but it doesn't have any of the hotcraft internal context available to it?
So what happens, it's up to the programmer in some sense to make it work if he wants to. What actually happens in our case is that the hotcraft object is not present in Apache's namespace, so the check fails. You can also write your policy to automatically load the hotcraft code as the policy is loaded. And then the hotcraft code could be loaded and let me run in more detail and probably again fail. But in some sense, this is a problem for the programmer to write very much like you.